Chapter 11. The First Day. The shaking no longer bothered Asavan Tortellius. His presence was an honour, and one he thanked the Mechanicus for in his daily prayers. In his 11 years of service, he'd quickly grown used to the shaking, the lurching tread, and even the rattling of weapons fire against the walls of his monastery. What Tortellius had never grown used to was the shield. In many ways, the shield replaced the sky. He had been born on Jirion, an unremarkable world in an unremarkable subsector, a middling distance from Holy Terra. If Jirion could be said to possess any attribute of note, it was its weather in the equatorial regions. The sky over the city of Handralai was the deep, rich blue that poets spent so much time trying to capture in words, and imagists spent so much time trying to capture in Picts. In a world of tedious tradition and the greyness of infinite societal equality, where everyone was just as poverty-stricken as everyone else, the skies above the slum hive Handralai were the one aspect of his early life worth remembering. The shield had stolen that from him. He still had the memories, of course, but every year they became duller, as if the shield's overreaching presence caused all else to fade. It wasn't that the shield had any particular colour, because it didn't, and it wasn't that the shield was brazenly oppressive, because it wasn't. Most of the time it wasn't even visible, and at the best of times it wasn't even there. And yet, in a way, it always was. It was oppressive. It was always there. It did discolour the sky. Its existence was betrayed by the abrasive electrical fizz in the air. Static would crackle between fingertips and metal surfaces. After a while, one's teeth began to ache. It was most irritating. And to think that it could be raised any moment. Looking up at alien skies held no pleasure at all, and it was all because of the shield. It severed any real enjoyment of the heavens. Even when deactivated, there was forever the risk of its slamming up into life without notice, cutting Tortellius off from the outside world once more. In moments of battle, the shield was more beautiful than threatening. It would ripple like breaking waves, the colours of oil on water cascading across the sky. The smell of the shield, as it suffered attack, was a heady clash of ozone and copper that, if one stood outside on the monastery's battlements, would actually begin to make you feel light-headed after a time. Tortellius made a point of standing outside when the shield was under siege, not for the stimulant effects of the shield's electrical charge, but because it was a dark pleasure to see his prison's limits rather than fear the invisible oppression. Sometimes he would wonder if he was watching it in the secret hope it would fail. If the shield came down, then what? Did he truly desire such a thing? No. No, of course not. Still, he did wonder. As he leaned on the battlements of the monastery watching the city below, Tortellius reflected on the loathsomeness of this particular breed of Xenos. The greenskins were filthy and bestial, their intelligence generously described as rudimentary and more accurately as feral. The mighty Storm Herald, instrument of the God-Emperor's divine will, had come to a halt. Tortellius noticed only because of the relative silence in the wake of its crashing tread. His monastery, only part of the cathedral of spires and battlements adorning the Titan's hunched shoulders, remained silent. 50 meters below, he could hear the rattling of the leg turrets killing the aliens in the street. But the domed weapon mounts, each one bristling with granite gargoyles and stone representations of the angelic primarchs, those blessed slain sons of the God-Emperor, merely moved in their set alignments, their cannons ready. Tortellius scratched his thinning hair, a curse he blamed entirely on the harsh electrostatic charge of the shield, and summoned his servo skull. It hovered along the battlements towards him, its miniature suspension technology purring as it stayed aloft. The skull itself was human, sanded smooth and modified after it was removed from a corpse, now showing augmetic pick-takers and a voice-activated data slate for recording sermons.
"Hello, Tharvon," said Tortellius.
The skull had once belonged to Tharvon Ushan, his favoured servant. How noble a fate, to serve the ecclesiarchy even in death. How blessed Tharvon's spirit must be in the eternal light of the Golden Throne. The skull probe said nothing. Its gravity suspensors hummed as it bobbed in the air.
"Dictation," said Tortellius.
The skull emitted an acknowledgement chime as its data slate, no larger than a human palm and built into its augmented forehead, blinked active. What little breeze penetrated the shield wasn't enough to cool his sweating face. The Armageddon sun might have been weak compared to the star that burned down on equatorial Geryon, but it was stifling enough. Tortellius mopped his dark-skinned brow with a scented kerchief.
"On this, the first day of the siege of Hive Hellsreach, the invaders have spilled into the city in unprecedented numbers. No,
hold, command word. Pause. Delete unprecedented, replace with overwhelming. Command word, unpause.
The skies are clogged with pollution from the world's industry. Flak hanging in the clouds from the Hive's defences and smoke from the outlying fires that ravage the outermost districts where the invaders have already conquered ground. It is my belief that few chronicles of this immense war will survive to be interred in Imperial archives. I make this record now not out of a desire to spread my name in pomposity, but to accurately detail the holy bloodshed of this vast crusade."
Here he hesitated. Tortellius struggled for the words, and as he chewed his lower lip, musing over dramatic description, the monastery shook beneath his feet again. The Titan was moving. Storm Herald strode through the city, its passage unopposed. Three enemy engines, the scrap walkers that the aliens called Gargants, had already died to its guns. In her prison of fluid, Zaha felt the stump at the end of her arm aching with a dull heat. Once, she thought with an ugly smile, I had hands. She aimed her next thought with care.
The Annihilator is overheating.
The Annihilator is overheating.
Understood, my princeps, replied Casimir.
He twitched in his restraint throne, accessing the status of the weapon through his hardwired link to the Titan's heart systems.
Confirm chambers 3 through 16 show rising temperature pressure.
Zaha turned in her milky coffin, feeling instinctively what every other soul on board needed to perceive through calculations on monitors or slower hardwire links. She watched Casimir twitch again, feeling the orders pulsing from his mind through willpower alone, reaching into the cognitive receptors at the Titan's core.
Coolant flush, moderate intensity, he said, commencing in 8 seconds.
Zaha moved her right arm in the ooze, feeling pain in fingers that no longer existed.
Flushing coolant,
said a nearby adept, hunched over his wall-mounted control panel. The relief was immediate and blissful, like a sunburned hand plunged into a bucket of ice. She cancelled the vision feed from her photoreceptors, immersing herself in blackness as relief washed through her arm.
Thank you, Valian.
Thank you, Valian.
Her vision flickered back into existence as she reactivated her optical implants. It was the work of a moment to readjust her perceptions, filtering out the immediacy of her surroundings. She took a breath and stared out across the city with a god's eyes. The enemy, ants-like and amusing, swarmed in the street around her ankles. Zaha lifted her foot, feeling both the rush of air on her metallic skin and the swirling of fluid around her footless limb. The aliens fled from her crushing tread. A tank died, pounded into scrap. Incidental fire from Storm Herald's leg battlements spilled into the road, cutting the orcs down in droves.
My princeps!
Moderati Secundus Lon was twitching in his throne as he spoke, his muscles spasming in response to the flood of pulses from his connection to the Titan. Speak, Lan.
Speak, Lan.
We are venturing ahead of our Skitarii support.
Zaha was not blind to this. She hunched her shoulders, wasted muscles tensed and trembling, striding forward through the street. I know. I sense something.
I know. I sense something.
The Hab Towers on either side of the marching Titan were abandoned. This sector was one of the few lucky enough to be within easy range of the city's scarce subterranean communal bunker complexes. Inform Colonel Sarin I am pressing ahead with Phase 2.
Inform Colonel Sarin I am pressing ahead with Phase 2.
Yes, my princeps.
This sector, Omega South 19, had been one of the first to fall when the walls came down the day before. The aliens had been crawling through the area for many hours, but significant scrap Titan strength was as yet unseen. It represented the perfect opportunity to slaughter legions of the enemy while their gargant groups were engaged elsewhere. A feeling grew in the back of her head, something invasive and sharp, blooming through the webbing of veins in her brain. It was something she had not heard in many, many decades. Someone was weeping. Zaha felt her face locked in a rictus as the feeling blossomed and grew fangs. The sharpness was jagged now, an acidic pulse through her skull.
My princeps!
She didn't hear at first.
My princeps!
Yes, Valian.
Yes, Valian.
We're receiving word from Draconian. He's dying, my princeps.
I know. I feel him. A moment later, Zaha felt the full shock grasp at her senses. The mortis cry slashed through her cognitive link like a hurricane, shrieking at a soundless pitch of pain. Draconian was down. The princeps aboard her, Jason Veragon, was screaming as the alien scuttled over his corpse, pulling at his armored metal skin as he lay prone. How had he fallen? And there it was. In the screaming cry was the memory she sought, the lurching of vision as the Reaver-class engine was dragged to its knees, the sense of infuriating immobility. He was a god! How could this happen? Why would his limbs no longer function? Everywhere around was rubble and smoke. It was impossible to see clearly. The scream was fading now. Draconian's reactor heart, a boiling cauldron of plasmic fusion, was growing cold and still.
We've lost contact,
said Valian, a second after Zaha sensed it herself. She was weeping, though the salt water secreted from her tear ducts was immediately dissolved in the fluid entombing her. Lon had his eyes closed, accessing an internal hololithic display within the cognitive link.
Draconian was in Omega West 5.
His dark eyes flicked open.
Reports show the site is the same as here. Evacuated habitation towers, minimal engine resistance.
The adept manning the scanning console, his mouth replaced by a scarab-like vocalizer, blurted a screed of machine code across the cockpit.
Confirmed,
Casimir said.
We're getting an Auspex return to the south. Significant heat signature. Almost definitely an enemy engine.
Zaha heard almost none of this. Images of Draconian's death played out behind her false eyes like scenes from a play, coloured by the stinking taint of black emotion beneath. She sobbed once, her heart aching like it would burst. Hearing only that an enemy was nearby, she walked in the fluid, her limbs moving. The Titan shook as it took another step.
My princeps,
both moderati said at once.
I will have vengeance.
Even in her own mind, she could barely hear herself in the words. A mechanical overtone twinned with her thoughts, and it was protective in its overwhelming rage.
I will have vengeance.
We will have vengeance.
Tower blocks passed by its shoulders as the Titan strode on.
My princeps, began Casimir. I recommend we hold here and wait for the Skitarii to scout ahead. No, I will avenge Jason.
No.
The Vox voice was harsh.
We will avenge Draconian.
Blind to the disparity between her thoughts and the emerging voice, Zaha pushed onward. Voices assailed her, but these she cast aside with a brush of willpower. Never before had she felt it so easy to disregard the chattering, needy voices of her lesser kin. Valian's voice, coming from the cockpit chamber rather than the cognitive link, was another matter.
My princeps, we are receiving requests for communion.
There will be no communion. I hunt. Communion with the Legio can come tonight.
There will be no communion. We hunt. Communion with the Legio can come tonight.
With effort, Valian turned around in his restraint throne. The cables snaking from his skull's implant sockets turned with him like a beast's many tails.
My princeps! Princeps Veragon is dead, and the Legio demands communion!
In his voice was the edge of concern, but never panic nor fear. The rest of the battle group desired the momentary sharing of focus and purpose, the unity of princeps and the souls of their engines. That was tradition in the aftermath of loss.
The Legio will wait. I hunger.
The Legio will wait. We hunger.
Forwards. Ready main weapons. I smell the Xenos from here.
Her voice emerged as a crackle of static, but Storm Herald marched on. While Casimir was not a man prone to extremes of emotion, something cold and uncomfortable crawled through his thoughts as he turned back to watch the cityscape through the Titan's huge eye lenses. He may not have been as connected to Storm Herald's burning heart as the Princeps was, but his own bonds with the Godwalker were not devoid of intimate familiarity. Through his weaker tie to the engine's semi-sentient core, he felt a depth of fury that was almost addictive in its all-encompassing purity. The passion transferred through his empathic link into grim irritability, and he had to resist the urge to curse the inefficiency of those around him as he guided the Titan onwards. Knowing the cause of his distracted irritation was no balm for it. The Titan's right foot came down on a street corner, pulverizing a cargo conveyor truck into flat scrap. Storm Herald turned with a majestic lack of speed, and hull-mounted picked takers panned to show a wider avenue and the afternoon sunlight glinting from Storm Herald's burnished iron skin. Valian was immersed, just for a moment, in the wash of exterior imagery fed through the mindlink. Hundreds of picked takers, each one showing pristine silvery skin or dense armor, cracked and pitted with its legacy of small arms fire. Ahead, down the wide avenue, was the enemy engine that blinked like a red-smeared migraine on the cockpit's Auspex scanners. Valian shuddered at the sight of it, breathing deeply of the scent-thick cockpit air. As always, living within Storm Herald's head smelled of oiled gears, ritual incense, and the burning reek of crew members sweating and bleeding, their bodies exerted despite remaining motionless in their thrones. The enemy scrap titan was grotesque, unappealing on a level that went far beyond mere design distaste to Valian. Its junk metal appearance showed no reverence, no respect, no care in its construction. Storm Herald's iron bones were thrice blessed by tech ministers, even before they were brought together as the skeleton of a god machine. Each of the million cogs, gears, rivets, and plates of armor used in the Imperator's birth was honed to perfection and blessed before becoming part of the Titan's body. This avatar of perfection incarnate faced its hideous opposite, and every crew member piloting the Titan felt disgust flow through them. The enemy engine was fat, big-bellied, to hold troops and ammunition loaders for its random array of torso cannons. Its head, in opposition to the Gothic-style machine skull worn by Storm Herald, was stunted and flat, with cracked eye lenses and a heavy-jawed underbite. It stared pugnaciously down the street at the larger Imperial Walker, its cannons covering its body like spines, and roared a challenge of its own. It sounded exactly like what it was, an alien war leader within the cockpit head blaring into a voxcaster. Storm Herald laughed in response, its warning sirens slamming back with a wall of sound. In her tank of fluids, Zaha raised her arms, her handless stumps facing forward. In the street, with an immense grinding of gear joints, Storm Herald mirrored the motion. It never fired. The trap, as crude and simple as it was, exploded around the great Titan.
Your request for reinforcement is acknowledged,
the voice crackled. Riken lowered the vox mic, readying his las rifle again.
They're coming,
he hissed to Vantine. The other trooper was with him, crouched with her back to the wall, sharing his slice of cover. Her expression was unreadable, masked by her goggles and rebreather, but she gave the Major a nod.
You said that half an hour ago.
I know. Riken slammed a fresh cell into his lasgun.
But they're coming.
The wall behind them buckled as it took the brunt of another shell. Debris from the ceiling clattered down onto their helmets. Riken's platoon was up to their necks in trouble, and no amount of hard fighting alone was going to get them out of it. Most of his men, the ones that weren't bleeding to death on the ground, were at the windows on the various floors of this hab block, pouring their fire into the street outside. The rooms were still full of furniture, left by the families who were taking shelter in local underground bunkers. It was, as last stands went, a pretty terrible place to be holed up in. But their barricade had fallen half an hour before, and it was every squad for themselves until they could regroup at the next junction. The problem was that Riken's platoon was cut off much too fast when the last bastion fell. As rearguard covering the other squad's escapes, they'd been encircled and forced to find whatever cover they could.
They're climbing the damn walls!
Someone cried out. Riken scrambled to the nearest window, keeping low and bracing to fire into the street again. As he rose to fire, he found himself face to face with a green-skinned creature hauling its way through the second-story window. It reeked of mould and gunsmoke, and its piggish eyes were glazed by whatever alien emotions it felt in the heat of battle. Riken bayoneted the beast in the throat, firing three shots even as he stabbed. The alien was hurled back from the window to fall on its companions below. They were indeed climbing the damn walls. Riken ordered three of his men to cover the window and raced for the stairs leading down to the ground floor. The snapping crack of las rifles firing was even louder from downstairs, where the bulk of the platoon was entrenched.
Reinforcements are en route,
he called down the stairs.
You said that half an hour ago,
Sergeant Callas called back up. Riken caught a glimpse of the sergeant, his bolt pistol clutched in a two-handed grip, kneeling at a window and firing booming shots out into the road. He retreated back to a nearby window himself, adding his fire to the onslaught. In the street, a riot of alien flesh was taking place. Only the most foolish or bloodthirsty orcs were seeking to race across the road and scale the building's walls. Most of the Xenos, and Riken thanked the Emperor for small mercies, possessed enough intelligence to remain in cover themselves, behind their own junk transports or shooting from windows of adjacent habitation blocks. They laughed and jeered as the barrage continued, and great howls of porcine laughter would rise up when another pack of baying aliens would charge across the street, only to be cut down by the Steel Legion's defences. Raucous enjoyment of their own kin's death was a barbarous madness Riken had long come to associate with this accursed Xenos breed. There was no understanding such creatures.
We can't hold here.
Vantine crouched under cover again, whispering a rapid litany of devotion as she reloaded her rifle.
You hear those engines? More are coming, Major.
We're not breaking out any time soon.
He spoke the words as a bitter curse, setting his rebreather straight. So we will hold.
Or we die.
That's not an option, and I'll shoot you the next time you give voice to it.
She smiled behind her own gas mask, but Riken saw none of it. He had risen to his feet and was leaning against the wall, his lasgun braced against his chest. He kept close to the wall, risking a look out of the window. What he saw made him curse more colourfully than Vantine had ever heard before.
So?
She rose close to him, taking position on the other side of the window.
Not good news, then?
Tanks! The bastards are rolling armour up the road.
Vantine chanced to look herself. Three tanks, Imperial Lehman Russ chassis, looted and improved with crooked armour panels bolted on and painted in mismatched hues. The jagged fronts of the three tanks showed alien glyphs of allegiance that meant nothing to human eyes.
We're dead.
She shook her head. And there's no need to shoot me. They'll shell this block to rubble and do it for you. Riken ignored her. Nikov! He keyed his Voxbeed live. Nikov! How's the launcher coming? Nikov was on the HAB block's top floor, where he'd retreated with his missile launcher 10 minutes before. The weapon had taken a beating when the barricade had fallen earlier.
Oh, it's still jammed!
Nikov's reply came over the Vox in a crackling hiss. After a pause of several moments, he added,
Did I hear you shouting about reinforcements again? They're coming. Throne, why is everyone whining about that? I think it's because we'd rather not die, sir.
The west wall chose that moment to explode. Debris burst into the room, filling it with stone dust. Through his goggles, Riken stared at a hole the size of 3 grown men in the HAB block's wall. Most of the soldiers nearby picked themselves up off the floor. 2 stayed where they were, mangled and unmoving.
Get that launcher working,
Riken said in the moment of eerie calm. Vantine scrambled to her feet and ran from the gaping hole in the wall. Outside offered alien laughter, the grinding of tank treads and a distant thrum of racing engines.
More!
Vantine called out.
That's not the enemy, Riken said. Those aren't tank engines.
And they weren't. His Vox speed screeched a distorted chatter of mixed channels, but one voice broke through.
Your request for reinforcement, it said, much too deep to be human, is acknowledged.
The room darkened as the gunship rattled past on whining turbines. It swooped low, strafing the street, opening up with its weapons. From its cruising angle, it clearly didn't intend to stay long, but the pilot was inflicting all the punishment he could while the Thunderhawk remained. Heavy bolters mounted on its wings and cheeks spat a torrent of lethal shells into the visible groups of enemy warriors. Inhuman blood misted the air as packs of the creatures burst under the explosive ammunition. Snarling, the diminishing groups of survivors returned fire, their stubbers chattering, the solid shells raining off the black gunship's hull like harmless hail. The tanks were another matter. The first shell crashed into the gunship's side with a storm's force, and Riken flinched back from the detonation. It spun the gunship on its axis, sending burning wind breathing from its boosters as it turned. In reaction to the attack, the avian shape gained altitude in a sudden thrust, banked over the first of the tanks, and at last dropped its cargo. Dark figures clanged onto the surface of the tanks, as black as beetles crawling on the metal skin. The first to fall, a figure on the roof of the lead tank, wore a silver-faced helm and wielded a mace with a sparking power field around its eagle-winged head. The weapon descended in a slice to shatter the vehicle's turret. It broke clean off and fell into the horde of aliens that mobbed the tanks from below.
Good morning, Reclusiarch.
Riken's voice was breathless with relief. The knight didn't answer at first. He and his standard-bearer were already engaged by the greenskins swarming up over the useless tank's hull, clambering higher in a desperate need to shed the blood of the Black Knights. Artarian's bolter emitted its stuttering crash, blowing the aliens back down to the street. With the brilliance of a sun flare, Grimaldus's plasma pistol disintegrated 2 of the climbing beasts, letting their burning skeletal remains tumble in pieces back into the horde. The second tank was dead in its tracks, smoke pouring from vents and cracks in its armor. The Templars had dropped grenades into the interior, and Riken saw 2 knights leaping clear, ignoring the slain vehicle as they waded into the aliens massing on the street.
Forgive the delay, Major.
The Reclusiarch wasn't even out of breath.
We were required at the barricade breaches in South Section 92.
Oh, better late than never,
Riken replied. The last word from Central Command suggested that Saren's plan in this sector was working better than almost all Hololithic estimations.
Are we getting redeployed for a counterattack?
On top of the tank, Grimaldus swung his mace in a vicious arc, pummeling an orc into ruined biological matter.
You are still breathing, Major. Let that be enough for now.
Dawn brought nothing more than a continuation of the night's bloodshed. The Hell's Reach Crusade begins its first bloody day. Across the city, millions of us now fight for our lives. The noise is like no other sound I have ever heard. In 2 centuries of life, I have waged war at the heels of god machines whose weapons were louder than the death cries of stars. I've stood against armies of thousands, while every soul that stood against us screamed their hatred. I have seen a ship the size of a hive tower crash into the open ocean on a far distant world. The plume of water it threw into the sky and the tidal wave that followed were like some divine judgment come to flood the land and erase all humanity beneath its salt-rich depths. Yet nothing has matched the sound of Hell's Reach's defiance. In every street, humans and aliens clash, with their weapons and voices merging into a gestalt wave of senseless noise. On every rooftop, turrets and multi-barrel defense cannons bark into the sky, their loaders never ceasing, their rate of fire never slowing. The machine roars of titans dueling can be heard from entire districts away. Never before have I heard an entire city fighting a war. As we fight to clear the streets of Major Ryken's besiegers, and as the Legionnaires themselves leave their havens and join us in the slaughter, I keep an edge of focus for the general Vox channels. Ryken was not wrong. While we are locked in our planned fighting withdrawal across the entire hive, precious few sectors are in unplanned retreat. The Wreck Titans are in the city now. Coldly delivered kill ratios from Invigilata commanders are a recent addition to the chaos of communication traffic, but they are a welcome one. Hell's Reach stands defiant as the sun rides the sky into noon. My brothers remain scattered across the city, reinforcing the weakest parts of the Imperial chain, supporting the defenses where the orcish tide breaks into the city with overwhelming force. I regret that we did not have the chance to gather together one last time. Such a lost opportunity is another of the failings I must atone for. The reports of their engagements reach me hourly. As yet, no casualties blacken our record. I cannot help but wonder who the first to fall will be, and how long the hundred of us will last as the hours become days and the days become weeks. This city will die. All that remains to be learned is just how long we can defy fate. And above all, I want the weapon buried beneath the wasteland's sands. I am drawing breath to recall our gunship when the Vox explodes with panic. It is difficult to make any sense from the maelstrom of noise. Key words manage to break through the mess. Titan, Invigilata, Storm Herald. And then a voice so much stronger than all others, speaking a single word. She sounds in pain as she says it. Grimaldus!